Religion on the Line. 2 hours of exploration into the world of spirituality, faith, hope, love, or the hot buttons of today. Talk about it now. 576-7710. And now, Religion on the Line.
Good morning. You've got Religion on the Line here at KCMO Radio. In the heart of the country, where we are going to, if not preside, at least, coagulate and gather and congregate a conversation so that we can convene ourselves into sharing. Give us a call at 576-7710 if you are part of the newer connection to the KCMO Talk Radio family at 710 AM, 103.7 FM. If you are connected to KMAJ, 1440 AM in Topeka.
Topeka.
Sometimes known as the Big Talker in Topeka. Put a 816 or 913 in front of that 576-7710. I'm Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church, along with
Bill Scholl with the Archdiocese of Kansas City, Kansas, along with
Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus, Temple B'nai Yehuda. What are all three of us doing here?
Hey, hey, you know, it's the stars have aligned.
Yeah.
It's a full moon. Or it was.
So the Big Talker has to go sit in the corner?
The Big Talker is over in Topeka, KMAJ, 1440 AM, and we welcome them. We welcome this broadening of the syndication of the show, I suppose we could say, and the reach that they are now, this is part of their programming, Religion on the Line.
Yeah. Lucky them. The Big Talker.
Well, we'll announce this not every segment, but once an hour, just to welcome them. We're very glad for their connection and partnership in this conversation. So, Michael, by the way, big thanks to Jim Levin, who subbed for Bill last week, and also then Barry Freese, who subbed for me. I was under the weather, and I could not recall a time when illness knocked me out, but that was it did a good job, and I was glad for the time away. So thanks, Barry. Anyway, what's on your mind this morning, Michael?
Well, I just got two brief items, although, Bob, when you talked about coagulating, you know, because of my skiing accident, I'm on a blood thinner, so may be a little behind us.
Oh, really? Now, wait a minute. The skiing accident, when did that
happen? Oh, you don't know about
that?
No,
I don't.
Is it 2 weeks ago now? Yeah, well, yes, it's 2 weeks ago. Sunday, January 31st, I was skiing at a resort outside of Pittsburgh with my grandchildren, two of our grandchildren and our older daughter and son-in-law. And one of the reasons I was there is because the kids are on a race team, and I was asked by my grandson, of course, to do a warm-up before his race. And I used to be a pretty good skier. He has wonderful form. I'm excited following down this trail. And at age 70, I will ski, and then I'll pause, and I'll ski, and I'll pause. But he forgot to pause, right?
Uh-huh.
So
he's gone.
We started at the top, and I'm just delighted. I'm keeping up with him. I'm doing great. And I think what happened, this is my excuse at least, is as we're nearing the end of the run, I was probably more tired than I was willing to acknowledge, and also probably not paying as close attention to my form because I had done well. And I took a nice little tumble, landed on my thighs. Oh, I bet I'm going to be sore. Put my skis back on, and I was sore, and skied the rest of the way down, not knowing, as I was to discover that evening when we got back, walking into the hospital, which, wow, you walked into the hospital, huh? Because I had a left femur neck fracture. Three pins, surgery the next day.
Whoa.
One of the delightful things was the surgeon was a former member of the Israeli national basketball team, so I'm sure it's the first time and only time in that particular operating theater that the surgeon and the patient right before surgery were speaking Hebrew to each other. But was confined. I could not fly until Monday of this past week. albeit we decided to do a little fail-safe and wait until Tuesday, because one of the issues related to lower extremity surgery is
blood clotting.
Yes. And so I am on a blood thinner, so I was just delighted with the notion of how delicately I now shave, you know?
Oh, my goodness. Well, Michael, blessings and prayers for you. And so was this an incision or arthroscopic
surgery? I have an incision, and they put in three pins.
Yeah, my goodness. Yeah. Well,
I'm making very, very steady progress. In fact, later this morning, I drove for the first time Friday. Actually, I was not allowed to drive until you're off of pain medicine and whatnot. And I'm teaching one of the things I'd like to ask for some. I'm teaching a class this morning at another synagogue in Chicago, and it's on messy moments in the Tanakh, which is fancy, messy moments in the Hebrew Bible. And I'm going to tell you what I'm planning on covering today. It's a three-part class, and hope that the folks out there would be able to add to what they perceive as certain messy episodes, challenging pieces of the Hebrew Bible.
I love it. I love it. Well,
May I?
Yes.
Okay. So the first one we're going to take a look at is Cain and Abel.
Plenty of mess.
Plenty of challenges there.
Yeah.
The next one we're going to take a look at is Lot and his visitors and the people of Sodom and Gomorrah, and why if sodomy is in the Hebrew Bible a reference to homosexuality, would Lot have offered the men, his daughters, as alternatives to the men. And then I've got Genesis chapter 30. Yeah, Judah and Tamar. And then we've got Judah and his approach to Joseph, and Joseph crying, including when Joseph and the brothers return from burying their father, that the brothers send a report that Dad said before he died, be good to your brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and that so far is more than enough for a day, but I'd be intrigued. I mean, for example, we'll probably have to take a look at Zipporah's circumcising Moses' sons, you are a bridegroom of blood to me, etc. And there may be some other stuff. I mean, I'm certain, not maybe, there are, definitively. I'd be delighted what folks have. This is troubling. What's going on here? You know?
How messy can the Bible get?
Yeah.
And I would put toward the list David and Bathsheba.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be one.
Mm-hmm.
But
I'd love to hear your take on why did Saul get in trouble because he refused to commit genocide?
You're not, what a great one, Bill. Saul and Samuel.
And maybe Samson
and Agog. Yeah.
Samson and Delilah.
There's comedy for you.
Yeah, yeah. Messy. Ends up with a big pile of rubble.
Mm. So, that's too literally messy.
Yeah. Well, we will continue to think about these, Michael. Okay. That's a wonderful class idea.
Well, thank you. I came up with it.
Uh-huh.
Two other items that I would love to play with today. Actually, maybe three. One is, Bill, it was a real small item in yesterday's Wall Street Journal that the Vatican and the government of China are moving closer to an agreement about bishops. I don't know if you know anything that you can.
No, that's great news.
As it happens, a Jewish holiday of some a greater consequence nowadays than it's had in recent years, Tu B'Shvat, the 12th day of Shvat, the Hebrew month, the New Year of the so-called New Year of the Trees, or as we would call it nowadays, one of the precursors of a notion of an Earth Day, of worrying about our mother. You know that that was Friday, Saturday of this year, and I'm not sure there's any equivalent in Christian traditions at all. I'm just curiosity about that. Finally, the United States is an amazing country. I trust we, all three of us, would agree to that, and I'm sure all our listeners would, if not an unprecedented moment on the world stage. And yet there are times when, what shall we say, the pendulum of American life or human life reflects a certain fearsome ugliness toward the other, to the stranger, which is no doubt why the Bible has that phrase, you know the heart of the stranger, for you were strange in the land of Egypt. So this little statistic, since 9/11, an average of 9 Americans per year have been killed by Islamic terrorists on U.S. soil. And my suspicion is, I should have broken this down, I haven't found it yet. Almost all of them were U.S. citizens. That is the perpetrators. That compares with 12,843 killed per year in gun homicides and 37,000 who die in auto accidents.
Mm-hmm.
God bless. Those are my items.
Oh, that's enough for five shows right there. So, Bill, we're going to come back to you and get your topics. We're going to take a break, eh? We're going to be right back after these messages here at KCMO Talk Radio, Religion on the Line. Good morning. You've got Religion on the Line here at KCMO Talk Radio, 710 AM, 103.7 FM. This is the time, this is the place to be. And we welcome again our new friends at KMAG in Topeka, 1440 on the AM radio dial over there. And they're known as the big talker. KMAJ. What did I say? Okay. KMAJ. 1440 AM.
You're going to get in trouble with the FCC.
Yeah. any rate, we are glad to be together. My name is Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church, along with
Bill Scholl with the Archdiocese of Kansas City in Kansas, along with
Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus, Temple B'nai Yehud. And by the way, I misspoke. Tu B'Shvat is the 15th of the month of Shvat. I don't want anybody to think two is not the Hebrew word for 12.
It's 12, okay.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that, Michael. That will forestall those angry callers that were getting ready to call us up and complain.
Michael, you missed out on it, just to be totally transparent. You know, this is a particular season in American culture that is absolutely glorious. It is it has nothing to do with the weather. Good, bad, indifferent, it still comes. It has nothing to do with sports. It has to do with something edible. This is Girl Scout cookie season. And we got inundated with wonderful salespeople in our sales girls, as it were, in our neighborhood. And so I brought a couple of boxes in this morning, and I'm sorry, I don't think I'll ship it to you.
I got some. I agreed to eat yours, Michael.
Well, you're entitled to my share, and I am delighted to extend it to you, Bill. But out of curiosity, what are your favorites, Robert?
You know, my favorite now is the lemon one. The lemon
shortbread. Oh, that's a sophisticated taste.
Shortbread. It's a new one. It's a new, new like in the last 10 years. But, and frozen thin mints. Take the thin mints and put frozen. Them in the freezer.
Yeah, gotta be frozen. Oh. Yeah, mine too. That's my favorite.
So what are yours?
Well, in the days that I vaguely remember having to buy them because my arm is being twisted by beautiful little girls with smiles, I'm a thin mint man.
Yeah.
I never thought about freezing them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the best.
I want a refund.
All right, Michael. Bill, what is on your mind this morning?
Well, Michael, one of the things, Francis is always issuing statements and such, and recently he had a meeting with the Anti-Defamation League. Did you read anything about that? And he condemned anti-Semitism and said it still continues to be a problem, which I agree, and I think it's commendable. I think the Catholic Church's relationship with our Jewish brothers and sisters has really gotten a lot better over the last 80 years or so. But I was curious. It made me curious, and I wanted to ask your perspective as a rabbi. Where do you see anti-Semitism being a problem in the world? Like, I think a lot of people tend to think, well, it's after the Holocaust, we've sort of gotten away from that in the Western world, and people might tend to think of it as being more of a Muslim issue. But I was curious, what's your perspective? Because I think you'd have more of a better view of it than me, but.
Well, ironically, Bill, on the occasions when I'm asked this kind of question, it would more often be by a news reporter, quite honestly, I will regularly point out to people that the persons you have to speak to are Jewish folks who are out there in the everyday, because I spend most of my life in the Jewish world, of course. And when I'm not in the Jewish world, I'm generally in a world where people are on their best behavior.
Yeah.
That is, that aside, the statistics suggest that in terms of hate crimes in the United States, by far the greatest number of hate crimes are committed against the members of the Jewish community.
Wow.
Far more even than the Islamic community, and that, of course, is a growing concern for every compassionate American. Europe, anti-Semitism slash anti-Zionism slash anti-Israelism, and it's very hard to know where one ends and one the other begins, right?
Right.
Because it's perfectly okay, in my judgment, to be against policies of the State of Israel, but the notion that the State of Israel has no right to exist is right at the heart of saying Jews have no rights.
Yeah.
In Europe, it's a very serious challenge, and there are many people who will intend. For example, if I'm not part of the Orthodox community, which does require that a male have his head covered at all times with some kind of distinctive covering, many people in Europe no longer do that. For fear of violence, because a significant portion of targeted violence has been against Jews.
This is a statistic worldwide, right, Michael?
Yes, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But it also, alas, includes that hate crimes in the United States, which are increasing. I mean, I don't know if you guys have been noticing, but JCCs are, it's almost becoming everyday factor of bomb threats against Jewish community centers.
Right. Yeah.
A synagogue here in less than a mile from where I'm talking to you right now was desecrated last week with swastikas and broken glass.
Mm.
They've caught the alleged perpetrator, but nonetheless, I mean, why? You know, what are the forces that require us to hate those who are different with such absolute certainty of negative commitment that we must act against them?
Yeah.
As opposed to, I want to know more about them.
Yeah, the fear of the other, somehow the othering of folks, and making somebody out to be a scapegoat for all the ills of the world or the ills that affect a particular subset of culture. So
that is for sure. For sure. And the Anti-Defamation League has a long and proud history of being the premier defense organization, which is to say working for building bridges and working to make sure that persons who are victimized are somehow embraced and that the perpetrators are brought to justice.
Yeah.
That said, Bill, the footnote you talked about in terms of the improving relationships between the Catholic and the Jewish community, that's no small matter, and that's a wonderful matter. Certainly Nostra Aetate, has the Vatican II document on other religions, has been a major vector for that happening. But it reminds me, right before my ski accident, I received a visit from some folks who are representatives of the Neo-Catechumenal Way. Are you familiar with that movement?
No.
Well, it's a Catholic revivalist spirituality movement, et cetera, et cetera. And it has the imprimatur of the Vatican. And I was invited to a conference in Israel that's being held at their organization's headquarters, so near the site of the traditional designation for the Sermon on the Mount, and that was three plus years ago, and they're having another gathering and just received the invitation again. So in May, I'll be calling us from Israel, God willing.
Oh, wonderful. Mm. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
It's
a gathering of cardinals, bishops, and rabbis.
I can remember, Michael, that call previously, and how energized you were and how moved you were by some of the statements. So
you're not kidding. You're not just whistling Dixie. What is that?
Hey, we're going to take a break, Bill, if you have any more.
Oh, yeah,
I got
a little bit more.
Then we're going to get to our caller, Dave. Hang in there. We're going to get right to you very quickly, maybe even before Bill. But we're going to pay some bills right now here at this half-hour mark. You've got Religion on the Line. Give us a call at 576-7710, 576-7710. morning. You've got Religion on the Line here at KCMO Radio, 710 AM, 103.7 FM. This is the big wall of sound of Rick Turner mashing up the generations, picking up goodness knows where from music for our bumpers, but we're grateful. I'm Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church, along with
Bill Scholl with the Archdiocese of Kansas City, Kansas, along with...
That's great wake-up music. Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus, Temple B'nai Yehuda.
I'd love to have that as my alarm music. And you know, and
I wonder what it becomes if it goes any longer.
It's got to be a movie theme. And Rick is going to tell us here in a minute. But at any rate, it is good to be back. And we're all back in the saddle, and grateful for that. And we're going to go to Dave. Dave is called from San Francisco. Good morning, Dave.
Hey, morning. And let's see, we had our Chinese New Year last night, so Guo Qi Fa Cai.
Okay. Which, okay, and this is the year of?
Oh, good grief. You want me to remember things like this?
Well, I mean, usually they're thematized.
It's the year of the rooster. I think it's a chicken. I can't remember.
Honestly. The rooster.
The rooster.
Rooster.
Yeah, all
sure.
Right.
Okay. Hey, you know, before I got started, I was going to give you a one-liner there, Robert. Did you ever hear how Nijinsky looked at his leaps?
No, but is this a joke?
You were talking about your skiing accident.
No, yeah, that's not mine. It's Michael's skiing accident.
Or Michael, I'm sorry.
Well,
yeah.
Bob's skiing accident was disastrous. It really was.
I had a cast to show for mine.
I didn't have surgery like Michael. Nijinsky was asked, he was famous for doing a leap, and then he would float in the air.
Yeah.
And so they asked him, well, how do you do this? And he says, well, I leap. And I pause, and then I land.
Mm.
So when you're skiing, you just got to remember that.
Mm-hmm. All right, Michael.
All right.
Hey, and this kind of leads to my purpose in you were talking stewardship. If this we just missed, was it Tu B'Shvat?
Tu B'Shvat.
Yeah. I looked it up, and apparently it's how you start to calculate your next jubilee.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously everybody in this world needs a big time out. And that's what a jubilee is all about, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we've never had one yet. And the sorry excuses for jubilees, and there was sort of an attempt in 2008. There was sort of an attempt in 2000, to, like with the bank collapse in 2008, to actually do a jubilee, cancel all debts in the face of corruption in the most massive scale, they didn't do a jubilee. Nonsense. All these people are homeless because of 2008, and we're doing political machinations to how to cut them off after such a massive looting and nothing's ever come back into the communities. You just got to do a jubilee. And so this whole Tu B'Shvat, apparently that's sort of the calculating. Is there a calculating point for a Tu B'Shvat?
Well, I've never heard the suggestion that Tu B'Shvat is used in this fashion. Generally, it's if you take a look at Leviticus,
I'm looking at Wikipedia.
Proclaim liberty throughout the land to all the inhabitants thereof. Isn't that found in Numbers, guys? You know, the Liberty Bell inscription.
I will have to look it up.
But I'm pretty confident it's in the Book of Numbers. But that said, the normative understanding is it's counted from Yom Kippur.
Well, yeah, it gives the Wikipedia.
Regardless, what you are referring to is something that is in the Hebrew Bible, but is enormously controversial among historians if it was ever carried out, ever. Period, namely the notion of the remission of debts in the Jubilee year, in conviction that the land, which was the principal means of wealth and currency, of course, does not belong to any human being. It's held in perpetuity by the collective and its own truly by the source of life, God.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
Michael, that is that is Leviticus 25.
Never mind. Don't tell anybody I was wrong.
No, but you would have gotten it eventually. I mean, but it is the description in the book of Leviticus about the year of Jubilee. So let me ask you this, Dave. You would like that to be done, and your motivation for that is for the good of the people, so that poor people aren't messed over, speaking of messy places in the Bible, any more than they are in real life right now. But as I understand it, that's not your background with regard to, it's not of a religious impulse that you want to proclaim this year of Jubilee.
Well, let me give you what I know.
I mean, because that's not your foundation. Well, religion or faith is not how you operate.
Well, I'm as much an economist as Moses was. And I think Moses was an economist. And George Washington Carver was an economist, too. You know, when he was talking about trying to revive the crop-failed South, you know, the soil-barren South that had been eaten alive by King Cotton. They'd ruined the soil for decades. And so George Washington Carver invents enough creative products from the soybean and the peanut, which would revive the soil by putting nitrogen back in the soil. So Carver, you'd have to look at him as an economist, and he was trying to revive the soil, which is stewardship. And, you know, of course, our purpose in the Garden of Eden is to be stewards of the earth. And the idea that we're allowing corporations to, we got the right to run a, you look dead serious north of you right now in that DAPL pipeline. They want to run a pipeline underneath your drinking water for a mile.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what could go wrong with that? Yeah. And this thing is so powerful, it's pushing 1 million gallons of gunk an hour. 1 million gallons. If it busted open for 40 minutes, you'd be in big trouble. And these guys are, they're tough guy talking how they have the right to run. Now, think of one ugly, even more uglier situation. They got 2 nuclear power plants north of you, and luckily they're going to shut down one of them. But what would happen if you had 1 million gallons of gunk hit the water intake coolant for a nuclear power plant?
Well, and Dave, isn't it great that we have a system where of government and representative government where you can speak these kinds of concerns?
Well, I just want to have it not go in. Because yeah, 1 million gallons into the reservoir.
Sure. But
I mean,
originally you called about, but you know, originally you called about Jubilee.
Stewardship.
You know, okay, well, you're talking about, all right, well, you're talking about stewardship and then you're talking about Jubilee. And part of stewardship is dealing with the question of how do we share the earth's resources, and particularly how do we share them, you know, how do we share them in light of viewing the earth as a gift that is not just meant for me, but it's meant for all of humanity. The Catholic Church calls that principle the universal destination of goods, where one of the lenses we look at allocating resources is realizing that the whole world is a gift for all of humanity meant to be shared and treasured in some sense for its own sake. I mean, there's certain areas of beauty that we should probably not touch because they're just we want to preserve them. So one of the great ideas of the American experiment was the national parks, just for that reason. Like these are natural wonders that should be preserved. But you want to be careful. You want to be careful, and as much as all those projects you're talking about, I mean, those are going to also benefit people. I mean, people need electricity, and so nuclear power plants is one way of obtaining electricity.
Well, they beat it out by solar so fast in North Dakota.
Well,
a state of
sure.
flat has more wind in it than they could run all of the electricity for the entire United States. If they were able to
and I've read statistics. I've read statistics too. If just every if every building in the United States, if every building in the city of the United States would put up solar cells, we could provide our power needs.
But they intentionally aren't. They're intentionally going out of their way to give tax breaks to nuclear power plants. And look at this stupid. I mean, the economics actually of the DAPL pipeline are useless anyway because they've just about played out all their oil
Dave, don't want to interrupt me. This is not a sociology show. And we got to go pretty quick, Michael. But I do want to point out to you the following. The only way we will make progress in our society is if we find ways to not simply say the other guy is always and in every circumstance wrong. Yeah. We all fall victim to this.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not singling out you. We have to find middle ways of recognizing everybody's stake in this stuff and not the assumption that only the position that I take is pure and absolute. Unfortunately, that's not nearly as easy to articulate or find that common ground, especially currently the way our society is splintering. But the fact is that the folks who do this stuff that you decry, and I don't dispute from my perspective similarly, they're not bad people.
Yeah.
Well, bad investments are still kill you. And actually, I think one of the biggest scams is going on is they're just trying to, they're going to use that pipeline for multiple purposes and finally to suck all the aquifer dry.
Okay. All right. We've gone now into a conspiratorial theory, and we'll deal with that another time and how you would suck water through a gas, crude oil or oil line.
It'd just be beyond my comprehension.
We'll talk about that later, but we thank you for your call,
Dave.
Yeah,
thanks for calling.
All right. And we're going to take a break, and we're going to be right back after all these messages. Good morning. You've got Religion on the Line here at KCMO Radio, Talk Radio, 710 AM, 103.7 in the heart of the country. This is Religion on the Line. I'm Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church, along with
Bill Scholl with the Archdiocese of Kansas City and Kansas, along with
Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus, Temple B'nai Yehuda.
Well, how about these suggestions right before we go to a break, and then we'll come back and we can talk a little bit about it. The number of sanctuary congregations in the United States has doubled since the election, and there are 800, Bill, 800, Michael, that have said that they will, they've declared themselves sanctuaries for undocumented immigrants. And I think this is going to be one of the more interesting encounters between the civil realm and the religious realm in America this year.
Well, you know, in the Diocese of Kansas City, St. Joseph, they their Justice for Immigrants campaign did a listening session with clergy, and then they did a listening session with immigrants who are Catholic, and just saying, what are your fears? What are your concerns? And one of the questions that came up was, you know, if it comes down to it, will Catholic churches open themselves up to providing sanctuary? So, that's a concern right here in our city, of when you have, and one of the things that people are often surprised, they tend to think of, when they think of immigrants, they tend to think of, okay, you know, this guy, you know, just a man who maybe came over and is trying to get a job, you know, or as a roofer or whatever. But most households in the United States that are immigrant families, 85% of them, that's the majority, are mixed status, meaning some people are here and they're U.S. citizens or they're permanent residents, and then other people are here because maybe their visa expired, and it's difficult for them to go back to their country to do what they need to do to get back. And so it's not as simple as just one person coming over and doing so illegally. It's a lot more complicated, and it has impact on our community. So there really is and there's a lot of fear right now. We're hearing that from our Catholics, that there's concern that, you know, mom might be walking home from work and just get taken by the authorities. And so they're starting to have workshops in which they're educating people, like, make sure you have all the phone numbers, make sure you have somebody that can pick up your kids from school if you are not able, you know, if you get picked up, make sure that there's contingency plans. So because you don't even get a phone call in a lot of time. I mean, you know, when you get picked up by ICE, you don't have the same kinds of rights that a citizen would have if they're arrested by the police. I remember years ago, one of the things we negotiated with the ICE Detention Center was to at least and they were really good about it, was to at least let pastors into the ICE detention facility so that the pastors could minister to the people there and also be a conduit of communication. Because once you get detained, you don't have access to the outside world. So, yeah, it's a real concern, and we need to be praying for our immigrant families. We need to be praying for refugees right now, that we can find a just resolution to this crisis. And I know people come down on this issue on a lot of different sides, but but there is a human reality to this that is as people of conscience, of people of God, we need to be lifting them up in prayer and asking for God's help in this issue, in this difficult time.
Here's a couple more topics. What would you guess would be the favorite Bible verse according to YouVersion Bible app? And they track these kind of things. YouVersion, Y-O-U Version Bible app. It tracks the Bible verses most often shared, bookmarked, or highlighted in different countries. And they said that in 2016, the favorite Bible verse worldwide was Romans 8:28.
Oh.
And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him. By the way, that's a bad translation.
Yeah.
The good of those. No. Works for good among those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. Anyway, but this is as of a January report. So,
well, that's one of my favorites.
I like Romans 8, but I like all the stuff that comes
before
that.
What's the one they put up at the Super Bowl? That's like
John 3:16.
Yeah, John 3:16.
Another thing is that the Catholic bishops are unpredictable. There was resistance when the Affordable Care Act came in because of the provision for birth control that they did not want to pay for. They didn't want Catholic institutions to pay for. But now, guess what? They've sent a letter to Congress warning that not to overturn the law without providing an immediate replacement, providing continuing coverage for millions who have been insured under the Affordable Care Act. And I think that's going to be kind of probably a theme, don't you think? That there ought to be something in place before you just pull the rug out if they intend to do that.
Well, I'm not surprised that the bishops are supporting getting health care for the poor. They've always done that. That's what made the contraceptive mandate so regrettable.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was helping the bishops when that law was being considered, and it was dead on arrival at the House of Representatives. And really, we launched a giant postcard campaign to try to persuade the House of Representatives to pass a bill. And the bill that came out of the House of Representatives was actually pretty good. And so it was so sad because nowhere during the discussion of the bill was contraception ever discussed, and it wasn't until after it became the law of the land that the Obama administration started talking about contraception and deciding, yes, this is a preventative service
implementation.
And yes, we're going to compel people to provide it, and that's when the whole imbroglio.
Yeah.
So,
well, we're going to come back to that and some other topics after the top of the hour, and we're going to listen to some news and pay some bills, and we're going to be right back here at Religion on the Line. 710 AM, 103.7 FM in the heart of the country, Religion on the Line, and we'll be right back.